When Bev Boer, of the 2011 nominating committee, called me to ask me whether I'd consider serving as president-elect, which is the practice year that you get before you have to be president, I didn't say yes right away. In fact, I'm sure she had to call me back to get my answer. And I'm grateful for her patience, which gave me some time to think about it. Well, you know what my answer was. I didn't have a clear vision or a reason why in my mind, but after I thought about it for a while, it just seemed like the right thing to do, like a good thing to do. But I've never thought of myself all my life as a leader. I'm sure I've mentioned to more than one of you, I've always seen myself as a person in the group who has lots of ideas, helps clarify others' contributions to the discussion, but I wasn't the one who called the meeting, who took the risk of proposing the concept first and inviting people to collaborate. I've thought about this a lot, and I suppose it could be attributed to a lack of confidence or fear. But of what? I asked myself this as I was preparing for this service. What am I afraid of? Probably this. Someone saying, that is the stupidest idea in the world. But that's not really it. Rosa Parks said, I've learned over the years that when one's mind is made up, this diminishes fear. Knowing what must be done does away with fear. It just takes me a long time to make up my mind. Just ask Steve, my husband of 30 years. After he asked me to marry him, it took me 3 months to say yes. I was pretty young, and he had a 5-year-old son. We were already creating our life together. We were living in a cabin in the woods with no running water, writing letters to each other when we were apart, and making plans for the future. I was doing what I always do, sitting with that idea, exploring the possibility of being married. And not necessarily just to being married to Steve, but just being married. What does that mean? You know, I'm thinking about it. Probably trying to decide whether it was the stupidest idea in the world. It wasn't. Over the years, I have found myself in positions of authority and management. In college, I got a job as a lifestyle assistant, a new program at University of Wisconsin-Stevens Point that placed us in dorms, kind of like resident assistants, like RAs, or we were LAs, and we were supposed to program healthy lifestyle events for the students. Looking back, I remember feeling like an imposter, like, how did I get here? I don't think I was very spectacular at that job, but I made it through the year. In 1990, we moved to Northern New York State, and a year later, I took a job as the manager of the food co-op in a town called Potsdam. Once again, I wasn't sure how I managed to convince the co-op hiring committee that I had the capacity to manage the business and inspire the staff, but there I was. I did help make some big positive changes there, despite my inability to see myself as truly successful. One of my favorite wise people, the Buddhist nun Pema Chodron, says, like all explorers, we are drawn to discover what's out there without knowing yet if we have the courage to face it. I guess I was drawn to opportunities where I knew I could collaborate with people in creative and life-affirming ways, and my courage came trailing behind me with its tail tucked. I think that the Wisconsin uprising of the spring of 2011 influenced my decision to say yes to Bev and the congregation, and to serve the congregation. I witnessed the anxiety, the joy and the power that people felt as they came together to express their disagreement and anger over the dismantling of human-centered policies of state government. I thought a lot about leadership and its influence in a movement. I saw that the uprising had a life of its own, with leaders emerging and fading from different areas like political, creative, and spiritual. I saw frustration when political leaders didn't do what their constituents thought they should, and when spiritual leaders weren't bold enough. My favorite leaders were the creative people who made witty signs, giant puppets, and exuberant music. My daughter Erica works at a YMCA camp called Camp Manitowish up in Boulder Junction. You might think that summer camp is all about swimming and campfires and capture the flag. Well, at this camp, they do all of that fun stuff, a lot of it, but they also do it all with the goal of building character and leadership qualities in the campers. And the staff learns a little too. They use the acronym Hear the Roar, which stands for humility, empathy, awareness of self and others, resourcefulness, resilience, optimism, adaptability, and responsibility. Hear the roar. They call these qualities the building blocks of character that provide a solid foundation for leadership. Now, what would it be like if we expected our elected leaders and our business leaders to exhibit these qualities? And if you can recognize these qualities in yourself, can you commit to practicing and magnifying them every chance you get? Oh, and if you commit to that, practicing and magnifying them, can you call yourself a leader? Daniel Pink, in a Washington Post blog post from January 28th, 2013, says, "The good news, then, is that in some sense we are all born to lead. We are equipped, born and equipped to lead. And that means a hidden but urgent challenge for organizations of every kind. The hidden challenge is to shatter the stereotype of who's an effective leader. When we choose leaders, we're understandably drawn to the gregarious, friendly types with their comfortable patter and ready smiles. But are they really the best? We might be better off with those who take a more calibrated approach, who can talk smoothly but also listen keenly, who know when to turn on the charm but also when to turn it off, who combine the extrovert's assertiveness with the introvert's quiet confidence. In other words, when it comes to picking leaders, perhaps we should look for people a bit more like us." Now, I'm not sure we should just throw out the comfortable patter and ready smiles. They do come in handy. But I do think that we all might do well to look in the mirror and see a leader there, no matter how small our efforts might seem. Throughout this year, I have seen people take on responsibility, care for each other, and work through hurt and disagreement for the good of our congregation. You might make a small change in your own life and be an inspiration to someone else who hasn't gathered up the courage to do the same. You might have some ideas about how to improve our congregation, and trust me, no one is going to say, "That's the stupidest idea in the world." To inspire you, I've found more words to share from two innovators in their respective professions. The first is Martin Luther King, Jr., in a sermon delivered at Ebenezer Baptist Church, Atlanta, Georgia, 4th February, 1968. He said, "And so Jesus gave us a new norm of greatness. If you want to be important, wonderful. If you want to be recognized, wonderful. If you want to be great, wonderful. But recognize that he who is great greatest among you, shall be your servant." That's a new definition of greatness. And this morning, the thing I like about it, by giving that definition of greatness, it means that everybody can be great, because everybody can serve. You don't have to have a college degree to serve. You don't have to make your subject and your verb agree to serve. You don't have to know about Plato and Aristotle to serve. You don't have to know Einstein's theory of relativity to serve. You don't have to know the second theory of thermodynamics in physics, but if you do, that's great. To serve, you only need a heart full of grace, a soul generated by love, and you can be that servant. And the second reading is from Margaret Wheatley, who's an American writer and management consultant, and she wrote this. There are many patterns, many beliefs out there about leadership, about people, about motivation, and human development. The essential truth I'm discovering right now is that when we are together, more becomes possible. When we are together, joy is available. In the midst of a world that is insane, that will continue to surprise us with new outrages, in the midst of that future, the gift is each other. We have lived with a belief system that has not told us that. We have lived, it's a dog-eat-dog world out there. Only the strong survive, and you can't trust anybody. That's what the belief system has told us. That is the belief that's operating in most organizations if you scratch the surface. The belief that called you to be a servant leader, I believe, is the belief of who we are as a species. We have need for each other. We have a desire for each other. And more, I believe that if the real work is to stay together, then we are not only the best resource to move this into the future, we are the only resource. We need to learn how to be together. That is the essential work of the servant leader. So with that, I'm going to leave my insecurities behind and declare our year together as a success. Yay! I'm honored that I had the opportunity to serve the congregation to the best of my ability. I'm grateful for your stewardship, your advice, and your patience throughout the year, and I'm looking forward